What would you do if Jesus walked up to you, told you to leave everything that you knew, everything that you had, everything you built for your security and sustenance, to follow him literally God knows where? Oh, I'm glad you like that one. Thanks. Or maybe this is a better question. When has Jesus walked up to you, invited you to build something different? Something you never knew you had the power and capacity to build? Or maybe this is a better question. When have you felt like you were a part of Jesus's work in the world? When has Jesus invited you to a movement? To the movement. I'm doing something today that I really, truly, hardly ever do. I have like points that I'm gonna make, like in a series. Like there's point one and point two, and you get the idea. I grew up listening to many a three-point alliterated sermon with bulletins that would have sentences where you'd fill in the blanks to prove that you were listening to the sermon. You know those? Anybody? I've got some witnesses. And I vowed never, ever, ever to repeat that model. But the spirit can often be a good check and balance on the ego. So here I am today with a six-point unalliterated, I have to maintain at least a small level of protest, six-point unalliterated sermon about boats and Jesus and what this moment in which Jesus calls his disciples tells us about movement building, about how to begin, how to build, how to cultivate, how to imagine a movement like Jesus's, a movement like Dr. King's, who we're continuing to press into in this season, a movement that shifts the tectonic plates of our collective imagination and moves us beyond our constructs, our fears, and our stagnant dreams deferred. I think this moment with Jesus and Andrew and Simon is a portrait, a snapshot of the architecture of movement building, at least the kind of movement building the gospel invites us to. So without further ado, and in homage to my snarkiness about three-point sermons, point one. Jesus met these early followers right where they were. He came to them, got in the boat with them, called them from close proximity, knowing their names, and even though the text doesn't tell us, I'm going to go ahead and bet, knowing their stories. Jesus meets them where they are without pretense or fanfare. He shows up in the middle of daily life, not at a strategy meeting or outcomes-based conference. He meets them right at the water's edge. But, and here's the big but, even as Jesus meets them where they are, he invites them, he cajoles them, he outright demands that they not stay there. He tells them again, without pretense or fanfare, to get out of that boat and follow him. Jesus meets us where we are, but he calls us not to stay there. Jesus might meet us in the middle of our ignorance about mass incarceration and its racial undertones, overtones, all the tones. Jesus might meet us in the middle of our surprise that every black friend we have has been pulled over by a police officer. Jesus might meet us as we try to make sense of a national narrative that we thought democracy and liberty and justice for all was a real thing, but we find out has left millions out of that narrative. He'll meet us there, but he ain't gonna let us stay there. Point two. But what is this boat, anyway? This boat that they must get out of. What's the big deal about leaving those nets and leaving that boat? See, I think this moment between Jesus and these soon-to-be disciples is symbolic of a deeper question that God asks each of us over and over again. Will we rely on the things we build and buy to ensure our security, or will we rely on the things of the Spirit, the things that cannot be eaten by moths or destroyed by time? Will our treasures be on earth or in heaven? Jesus challenged people to think about how their physical choices, i.e., use of their economic resources, vocational decisions, time and energy, are always spiritual choices too. When Jesus tells these folks to leave their boats, he's telling them to leave their ideologies of security, even if it might have been little security, a few boats in the face of the Roman Empire, for the sake of deeper and wider collective freedom. Point three. Jesus compelled these people with metaphors, with language, with action that met them at their deepest level. He actually trusted the skill sets and passions and interests that people already had and pressed them to use those things for the sake of humanity instead of the economic interests of systems of power. Jesus believed in the value of the poetic, of the personal, of stories and ideas and imagery that makes sense to us, all the while elevating our thoughts and visions far beyond ourselves and our one boat. Point four. Jesus offered direction without offering solutions. He respected the autonomy of each person to make their own way. Think the rich young ruler who ultimately walks away from this whole wild idea. But Jesus did not waver on his conviction in the process. Jesus can't force us to take a long, hard look at how some of us have merited from white supremacy. Jesus can't force us to learn about redlining in the housing industry that for decades has kept black and brown folks from building any personal assets or wealth, while white folks have kept building equity and security. Jesus can't force us to learn about the actual history of immigration in this country. Jesus won't force us to get on the narrow road with him as he dismantles evil systems with the power of mutuality and love. When Jesus says, "Come and follow me," he knows full well you might not. Or you'll lag behind. Or you'll get on, then get off. But when he looks you in the face and says, "Come and follow me," is there a sweeter sound in the whole world? Point five. We're rolling along. You're still with me, I think. Jesus really believed that what he had to offer was good news. No matter how bad, read, unsettling, disorienting, life-changing it may have seemed. In this moment, he invites these men to give their lives to people. Jesus is telling these unexpected disciples, is telling us that the good news has been and always will be about people. It will always be about pulling not fish, but people out of waters they were never meant for in the first place. About getting people onto the dry ground of equity, of wealth redistribution, of basic health care, of a living wage, and of the freedom to live without the fear of police brutality and deportation and a militaristic state of Nineveh or America. Take your pick. Jesus has good news. It's scary when we have to think about our nets and our boats as items of complicity, maybe even harm. But it sure is exciting when we discover that the same hands that once have held nets have been made to hold people's lives. All right, folks, here we are, point six. Even Jesus didn't know everything that would happen. And sometimes he got it wrong. Blasphemy! I know. You'll get it wrong too. You'll start helping build a movement and not check to see if it's inclusive enough. Or you'll give yourself to movement building shaped by the gospel and get lost in political games and power plays. Or you'll follow Jesus and discover that your ego, self-interest, and old wounds will get in the way. Or you'll call the Canaanite woman a dog and realize that what you've been building still has a long way to go. That doesn't mean you shouldn't leave your boat behind anyway. Have you decided to follow Jesus? Will you follow Jesus through government shutdowns and unjust deportations? Will you follow Jesus through the fog of white supremacy into the clear skies of brotherhood, sisterhood, siblinghood? Will you follow Jesus when he dismantles misogyny and raises up women and men who demand basic dignities like consent, mutuality, and respect? I don't know, maybe even love? So I lied. This sermon is alliterated. Are you ready for it? I hope so. First, Jesus calls us beyond what we've known. Second, he challenges us to assess and reallocate our physical resources. Third, he compels us with language and imagery that incites our aspirations and imaginations. Fourth, he carries us forward without promising all the answers up front. Fifth, he captures our hopes with good news, no matter how scary it sounds. And sixth, he commits to the possibility of real failure without ever giving up. I did it. Wow, that was a pretty sad applause, but Jesus is a movement maker who knows that his movement is only as powerful as the movers who move with him. Jesus knows that the movement does not belong to him, nor does it belong to any of us. So we hold it powerfully, gently, all at the same time. Jesus reminds us that come and follow me is not a quick fix for boredom or self-loathing or fragility or partisan wins. Come and follow me, and I will make you fishers of people. I will make you a lover of humanity. I will fill your heart with things you have not yet seen. I will take you to a place you've never been to, that you don't even know exists, but that I promise you, you're ready for. Come and follow me, and I will make you fishers of people. Let's go build a movement, church. Amen.